Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and this week, we are looking back at the summer of 1993. 20 years ago, Janet Jackson had a number one album, Whitney Houston had an inescapable hit, Nirvana led the grunge pack with their album In Utero, and the British band Depeche Mode tried to do a Q&A with their fans over a newfangled contraption called the Internet. Let's just say that was not AOL's finest hour. That was also the summer when I turned my name into an unpronounceable symbol, which is how I came to be known as the announcer formerly known as John Schaefer. Or wait, maybe that was Prince. I don't know, it was so long ago it's hard to remember. But we are going to ask you to do just that. Remember where you were 20 years ago and tell us what you were listening to. You can call us at 866-939-1612, tweet us at Soundcheck, or leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. That number again, 866-939-1612. We'll check in with some of you in a little while, and by then I'll sort out what I was actually doing back then. And just to show we're not living entirely in the past this week, we'll have a visit from violinist Sarah Neufeld. You've probably heard her quite a bit over the years playing with the band Arcade Fire, but she's done a solo album of beautiful violin works, and will play some of them for us live. But first, back to the summer of 93. Need some help remembering what was hot and what was not 20 years ago? Never fear, Chris Malanfi is here. The pop chart columnist and NPR music contributor joins us in the Soundcheck studio. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you so much, John. Great to be here.
So, what was topping the charts in that summer 20 years ago?
Well, depending on which chart you were looking at, it was kind of a dog's breakfast of assorted stuff. It was all over the place.
Is that a good thing, a dog's breakfast?
I think so. looking at the singles chart, there were two songs that dominated that summer. I think we're going to be listening to at least one of them in a bit. One was by Janet Jackson. It was a slow jam ballad called That's the Way Love Goes. And the other was a light reggae cover of the Elvis Presley classic Can't Help Falling in Love by the reggae band UB40. Those two records each spent about 2 months each on top of the Hot 100, and they basically bookended the summer. So if you were driving around, going to the beach in the summer of 1993, you were going to hear one or both of those songs, inevitably.
Well, you were going to hear one of them right now. Janet Jackson with a song called That's the Way Love Goes, one of the big hits of the summer of 93. Love Goes. That's the way the song went 20 years ago. Janet Jackson from her album Janet, which, as Chris Malanfi was just telling us, one of the really, really big songs of the summer of 93.
Yep.
But not the only one. I mean,
no. That's at the top of the charts.
Yeah.
Now, there was a record that peaked at number two that summer that I would argue is even more omnipresent, and I think all I have to do is mention the title of it, and it's going to come flashing back in your memory. And the title is Whoomp, with an exclamation point, There It Is, by the Atlanta duo tag team. Mm-hmm. It peaked at number two, kind of got stuck behind a couple of number one hits, but it was a massive song. It was totally omnipresent. It was one of only two songs in 1993 that sold 4 million copies, the other being Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, to give you a sense of the magnitude of this record. Mm-hmm. It was a progenitor of what was then known as the Miami bass sound. There were several records on the charts that year that had this sound. It was, as it sounds, very bass heavy, kind of booty shaking music, perfect for blasting out of your Jeep. And Whoomp, There It Is was the most omnipresent of all these songs. And it was basically everywhere in the summer of 93.
Yeah, I really hated you when I saw this come up on your list because it was like, you want to talk earworm?
Seriously.
This thing burrows in and
I apologize to everybody preemptively.
These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoomp, There It Is, hit me.
So we are talking about the summer of 93. I suppose, Chris Melanfi, there were two types of people in 1993. The people who were listening to this song and the people who were desperately and unsuccessfully trying to find a place where they would not hear this song.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
The song is Whoomp, There It Is, tag team, a ubiquitous hit for
Absolutely.
Them in the summer of 93. All right, the Hot 100 is the singles chart.
Uh-huh.
But there's another chart, the album chart, the Billboard Top 200. What was going on there in the summer of 93?
That was a really interesting variety that summer. I'll just run down the roughly five or six records that were on top during that summer, because when I said Dog's Breakfast earlier, this is where you really get the assortment. At the start of the summer, we've already talked about Janet Jackson, her mm-hmm. record Janet, which was a huge hit. That topped the list for several weeks. Then for 1 week, you had Back to Broadway by Barbra Streisand. Yes, that Barbra, sequel to her earlier The Broadway album. For 2 weeks after that, you had U2 at number one with Zooropa. You could kind of think of that, like the Barbra Streisand album, as a sequel, because in effect it was the sequel to Achtung Baby, the 1991 record where they reinvented their sound, went in a more ravey, alternative direction.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Zooropa went way deeper into that sound. After that, you had a couple weeks at number one by Black Sunday by Cypress Hill. Cypress Hill, the stoner rap act, I guess we can call them. And they had a massive hit on the radio that summer called Insane in the Brain, which was also rather omnipresent. And finally, bringing up the rear at the end of the summer was Billy Joel's last pop album of any kind, River of Dreams. He hasn't recorded a pop album since this, and it spent 3 weeks at number one at the end of the summer.
Wow.
So kind of an assortment at the top of the album chart.
And also near the top of the album chart, all summer long,
yep.
a record that was already a couple of years old.
That's right. Pearl Jam's 10 was by this point a little less than 2 years old. It had come out in the fall of 1991, roughly at the same time as Nirvana's Nevermind. And you can kind of think of Pearl Jam in the summer of 1993 as, I don't know, the presence or the elephant in the room. They didn't have a new record out, but they were still everywhere. If you flipped on rock radio in the summer of 93, odds are you were going to hear Black, which mm-hmm. was the last single from that record. That was quite ubiquitous in the summer of 93. The very first week of September 1993, their video for Jeremy, which had first come out in late 92, that won the MTV Video Music Award Video of the Year.
Very controversial video.
Very controversial video about, you know,
a school shooting.
A school shooting. Exactly. So Pearl Jam were kind of like the omnipresent. One of my favorite tidbits about Pearl Jam in the summer of 1993 is that they're even name-checked by Sharon Stone in the movie Sliver. Her character is offered tickets to a Pavarotti concert, and she says, "Pavarotti, I'd rather see Pearl Jam." That's how absurdly huge Pearl Jam were in the summer of 1993.
Well, and let's not – I mean, you mentioned U2. I mean –
Yep.
They had been huge. Achtung Baby was a kind of a redefinition of their sound, but
totally.
a somewhat successful one.
Mm-hmm.
Zooropa, where is this in the arc of their career?
Zooropa, I think, is the one that really led them to kind of go back to their knitting for a few years, because it was an acclaimed record, but a strange record. It generated no hits, unlike Achtung Baby, which had generated Mysterious Ways, One. These were top 10 hits. Zooropa was a very odd record that went way deeper into that kind of post-rave, early electronica sound that they were pursuing at the time. The singles from it were Numb, which featured a lead vocal by The Edge, of all people.
Right, the guitarist.
It closed with a duet with Johnny Cash. This is, by the way, before Johnny makes his comeback with Rick Rubin.
Right.
It puts him against an electronic background. Very strange record. None of the singles were top 40 hits. But but U2, you know, given that they're U2, they had a number one album nonetheless.
The album was Zooropa, and this was the first single off of it from U2 called Numb.
Don't move, don't talk, out of time, don't think, don't worry, everything's just fine, just fine. Don't grab, don't clutch, don't hope for too much, don't breathe, don't achieve or grieve without leave. Don't shake, just balance on the fence, don't answer, don't ask, don't try and make sense. But don't talk, don't run if you can walk. Don't cheat, compete, don't miss the one beat. Don't travel by train, don't peek, don't spill. Don't piss in the drain, don't let the world.
U2, Numb, is one of the songs from their 1993 album, Zooropa. We are talking about the summer of 93, revisiting 20 years of music and memories all this week on Soundcheck. My guest is Chris Melanfi, music critic, contributor to NPR Music's The Record blog and various other places. Listeners, where were you in the summer of 93, and what were you listening to? You can post a comment on soundcheck.org or find us on Twitter or Facebook or call us at 866-939-1612, 866-939-1612. We'll check in with some of you in just a few minutes. But back, Chris, to the summer of 93.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Pearl Jam's 10, this kind of enduring thing that would not go away.
That's right.
Even though they would put out another record late in the year.
And it had an explosive opening because they were, you know, the biggest rock band in America at that time.
What else was going on? I mean, in the world of hip-hop, you had Dr. Dre.
Absolutely. I would say that the other sound that was sort of wafting in the background of virtually everything in the summer of 1993 was, you know, gangster rap, largely in the form of Dr. Dre's The Chronic, which spun off three top 40 hits, including two top 10 hits. In the spring, Dre and his protege, I think we can call him this with 20 years hindsight, Snoop Doggy Dogg, as he was known back then, had a huge number two hit with Nothing But a G Thang, which is widely regarded as a classic of the hip-hop genre from that period. And in the summer of 93, he had another follow-up hit called Dre Day, and he had a third top 40 hit by the fall called Let Me Ride. So that G-funk sound that Dre really helped invent was sort of in the background everywhere that year.
The album was called The Chronic, three top 40 hits, and introducing us to the guy that we now know as Snoop Lion?
Yeah.
Kind of, but Snoop Doggy Dogg back then with Dr. Dre.
It's like this and like that and like this, Anna. It's like that and like this and like that, Anna. It's like this and like that and like this, Anna. Dre creeped to the mic like a fan.
Well, I'm beeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping. But I damn near got caught because my beeper kept beeping. Now it's time for me to make my impression felt. So sit back, relax, and strap on your seatbelt. You've never been on a ride like this before. With a producer who can rap and control the maestro at the same time with the dope rhyme that I kick. You know and I know I flow some old funky shit to add to my collection. This selection symbolizes dope. Take a toke but don't choke. If you do, you have no clue of what me and my homie Snoop Dogg came to do.
It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this.
And who gives up a fuck about those?
So just chill to the next episode.
From Dr. Dre's iconic record The Chronic from the summer of 93. That is Nothing But a G-Thang featuring Snoop Doggy Dogg, as he was known back then. And yes, that is the cleaned up radio version of the song.
Very necessary.
We're talking about the summer of 93, where you were, what you were listening to. Chris Melanfi's here with me in the studio. And producer Joel Myers in the studio with some of your comments and tweets. Joel.
John, a couple of comments from soundcheck.org. Where was Dave in the summer of 1993? He was 10 years old at summer camp and listening to Pocket Full of Kryptonite on cassette almost every day. That would be the Spin Doctors album, John, in case you don't remember the earworm known as
remember.
The Spin Doctors.
I do remember the Spin Doctors.
I remember it, too.
Jeb from Williamsburg writes, I was listening to Loser, Beck's first single, which came out in 93, and exploded the assumed distinctions between indie, pop, hip-hop, and just about every genre, which is now basically de rigueur. Jeb also writes, of course, I probably learned of the single through radio, MTV, a fanzine, or someone's older brother. You know, the old-fashioned way of discovering new music. And I wanted to read you a tweet, John, that we got from Eleanor. She wrote, sadly, Billy Ray Cyrus. I know, but that mullet had magic powers that lured my ears in 93.
All right. Some of what our listeners were checking out in 93. Chris Melanfi, where were you in 93 and what were you listening to?
In 93, I was graduating college. I am actually college class of 93. So I was working my first job, trying to stay cool. And, kind of knocking around New York, trying to figure out what to do in my early 20s, basically. Mm-hmm.
So when we asked you to do this with us today, you went digging through your archives and found...
Yep. I found my original top 10s, actually. This is a little embarrassing. I wasn't...
I'm here to embarrass you, Chris, as publicly as possible. So come on, spill.
Yeah, no, I earned this. So I wasn't a published critic yet at the time. The only people who would, even read my top 10 list were the folks at my old college music magazine. I wasn't even at school anymore. But at the end of the year, they were nice enough to let me send them top 10 lists. And I liked an odd assortment of stuff back then. My number one album of 1993, this came out late in the summer of 93, was the Pet Shop Boys' Very. Really loved that record. Played the heck out of it. My number two was U2's Zooropa, which we just listened to a few minutes ago. And my number three, this is a record that in the subsequent 20 years, I really have to confess I've probably played more than anything, was Liz Phair's Exile in Guyville, which also came out, I believe, really fall more than summer. But that just starting to make the rounds of the zines and the indie press back then.
So with the benefit of 20 years of hindsight, would you say the Liz Phair record was the album of the year for you?
It was the album of the year for me, and it was clearly the album of the year for a lot of people. It topped Paz and Jop that year.
The Village Voice poll.
The Village Voice poll of critics. So, that's got to be the record of the year.
But Pet Shop Boys is the one that you put 20 years ago at number one.
Yes, back when I was 22 years old.
song that we'll hear from the album Very is, this was the first single, right? Can You Forgive Her?
That's right, it was.
This is the Pet Shop Boys.
Truth.
That's the Pet Shop Boys, their 1993 album, Very, topped Chris Melanthi's list for his college music magazine back there in 93.
I'm blushing right now.
It's not a bad record. I mean, Liz Phair might, you know, might have been
a more lasting impact,
as you said before. But there was a lot of good stuff happening in 1993. And it was also a time where the 80s new wave was being usurped by a new wave of stuff.
That's right. I mean, by 1991, we all know that, you know, Nirvana had their breakthrough with Nevermind, and that leads to the grunge boom. What's interesting about the charts of 93, if you're looking at the modern rock chart, which is Billboard's alternative music chart, is that you see a chart in transition. You basically see that the last gasp of what we called new wave in the 80s is hitting at this point. So you have number one hits like New Order's Regret, which was their last big hit before the band, you know, fell apart, you know, with Acrimony. You had number one hits like Tears for Fears, final hit, Break It Down Again. So these are bands from the 80s that are sort of having their last hurrah. And then Rising, we heard one of our callers talk about Loser by Beck. That would be a number one hit toward the end of the year, beginning of 94. That was just being released at the time. You sort of see the new wave movement really giving way entirely to the alternative movement. 93 is kind of the moment where alternative is taking over. And you start to see a newer generation of alternative bands breaking at this point.
Like Porno for Pyros, which was the band that Perry Farrell of Jane's Addiction formed after breaking up Jane's Addiction.
That's right. Jane's Addiction was what turned out to be a long hiatus, but
but
Perry was kind of at the height of his fame and popularity at this point. This was the moment when Perry Farrell could command covers of magazines by himself, thanks to founding Lollapalooza.
Had he founded Lollapalooza
by
93?
Yes, that started in 91. So Lollapalooza was in one of its biggest years, actually, by 93. I believe there were people like L7 and Arrested Development on that tour by 93. So it was a huge tour. And Perry's other band, Porno for Pyros, had their number one hit on the modern rock chart that summer called Pets. And you could hear that all over the place if you listen to rock radio.
This is Porno for Pyros and the song Pets. We've been speaking with Chris Melanthi, music critic and contributor to NPR Music's The Record blog, about what was on the charts in that summer of 93. Chris, good to see you again.
Great seeing you, John. Thanks very much.
That's from Porno for Pyros. It was on the modern rock chart, as Chris Melanthi was telling us. Up next, we'll hear from some of you about where you were and what you were listening to in that summer 20 years ago. You can call us at 866-939-1612 or hit us with a comment online at soundcheck.org. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're remembering the summer of 93 and asking, where were you 20 years ago and what were you listening to? Well, 20 years ago, I was right here. And when I say here, I mean not just New York, but here in the studios of New York Public Radio. And I was listening to Nirvana and this new band called Radiohead. But I was also listening to a symphony by Philip Glass. The Low Symphony took melodies from David Bowie's 1977 album Low and made a big three-movement symphony out of it. Some of Philip Glass's Low Symphony. I loved that an experimental rock album could spawn a modern classical music piece. Okay, so what were you listening to that summer 20 years ago? Let's go to the phones. You can call us at 866-939-1612 or reach us online at soundcheck.org. Let's begin with Lori right here in New York. Hi, Lori.
Hi. So that summer, I was actually 12 years old in Austin, Texas. Uh-huh. And among listening to both like Madonna and Janet Jackson, like you guys already talked about, I remember Sheryl Crow and her album
Tuesday Night Music Club.
Tuesday Night Music Club, yeah. That's when she was still with the band, yeah. And I remember when All I Want to Do would come on the radio during art class. I loved that song.
It was kind of hard to escape, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I liked it, but I know some people didn't. It's overplayed, but I actually still own the album and love it.
Yeah, it was one of the summer hits, a great video that played when MTV used to play music videos.
Yes, yeah.
All right, let's hear a little bit. This is one of Laurie's memories from the summer of 93. That is Sheryl Crow, All I Want to Do, from her hit 1993 record, Tuesday Night Music Club. And boy, with lyrics about the phone company and record stores, that is very much a song of its time. 20 years ago, we're talking about where were you in 93, the summer of 93? What were you listening to? Jenny's on the line with us from Astoria, Queens. Hi, Jenny.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Where were you 20 years ago?
I had just graduated from college and returned to New York City, and I'm a girl of the 80s, so all of my music at that time was like Spin Doctors or the Proclaimers, but I'm a Durani at heart, and I listened to Ordinary World quite often that summer.
Duran Duran.
Yes.
So when Chris Melanfi was talking a few minutes ago about how the 80s new wave was being supplanted by the alternative rockers, for you, that you were still hanging on to the old stuff, huh?
Well, in terms of the band, yes, but I think Duran Duran's longevity is that they've also, you know, changed the way that they introduce music to us and have applied new technologies, and I think that's a testament to Nick Rhodes' awareness of what's going on in the music world.
Do you still listen to this record?
I do, and they have a new album being recorded in studio right now. I'm ashamed to say I know that.
Nothing to be ashamed about. I mean, there's still a lot of Duran Duran fans out there. For Jenny, a walk down memory lane, the song is Ordinary World. That is Duran Duran with Ordinary World. Once again, we're remembering the summer of 93. It was 20 years ago. Where were you? What were you listening to? John's on the line with us from New Jersey. Hi, John.
Hey, John.
So where were you 20 years ago?
I was living in San Francisco at the time, running a bookstore there and listening to lots of music.
Anything of the period? What does the summer of 93 bring to mind for you?
For me, it was the years of grunge and shoegaze, which, I was just layering that on my turntable all the time. A lot of my Bloody Valentine,
right.
Swerve Driver, Tad. I saw a connection between the American rock and the British rock. Last Splash came out that summer, at the end of the summer. A beautiful record by the Breeders.
Mm.
Cannonball was the big hit, but I think my favorite song in there was Divine Hammer.
Well,
that
then
was the one doing it for me.
Then, John, that's what we will play for you. For John in New Jersey, from the summer of 93, it's The Breeders with Divine Hammer.
I'm just looking for a way around.
Divine Hammer from The Breeders, from their album Last Splash, another song from that summer of 20 years ago. Let's hear one of the voicemails that came in at 866-939-1612. This is from our listener, Adam.
Sublime, sublime, sublime. Bradley Nowell was everything to me when I was in high school in 1993.
Got your hair permed. You got your red dress on, screaming that second gear was such a turn on. And the fog forming on my window tells me that the morning's here and you'll be gone before too long. Who taught you those new tricks? Damn, I shouldn't start that talk. But life is one big question when you're staring at the clock. And the answer's always waiting at the liquor store. 40 ounces to freedom.
40 ounces to freedom from Sublime. That's Adam's musical memory of the summer of 1993. Once again, you can get in on the action. Tweet us at Soundcheck or leave a comment on our website, soundcheck.org. Or call us, 866-939-1612. Heather is with us on the line from Detroit. Heather, where were you 20 years ago?
Well, I was living in the country in Michigan with my sister, and I was in seventh grade. She was in fifth grade. And we were listening to a lot of angsty grunge, like Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chris Melanfi, when he was here, was sort of telling us that even though the Pearl Jam record was 2 years old, it was still everywhere in that summer of 93. Do you remember it that way?
I remember listening to 10 for about 5 years. It never went out of my CD player. And then Versus came out, and that was a little softer. But it was, you know, 10 was still the album of that summer for me.
Right. And Versus didn't come out till late in the year, so it wouldn't, you wouldn't have been hearing that in the summer. Heather, have you heard the new Pearl Jam track that they released just a few days ago?
You know, I haven't. I kind of lost touch with them about 10 years ago, sad to say. And I still, you know, I still listen to the older stuff, but the newer stuff I haven't really picked up on.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play a little bit for you, see what you think of it. The new Pearl Jam record is due in October. It's going to be called Lightning Bolt, and this is the song that's been released. It's called Mind Your Manners. That is the song Mind Your Manners from the forthcoming Pearl Jam record called Lightning Bolt, which is due in October. Thanks to everyone who's called in or sent us a voicemail or a tweet. You can tell us your Summer of 93 story all this week by calling us at 866-939-1612. Up next, violinist Sarah Neufeld, whom you may know from the band Arcade Fire, joins us in the studio for a live solo performance. This is Soundcheck.
Listen.
Sound check.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Usually when we hear Sarah Neufeld's violin, it's soaring over jangly guitars and pounding drums and the full-throated cry that is the rock band Arcade Fire. But Sarah has also been exploring her instrument in a solo and almost solo setting. Her forthcoming album is called Hero Brother, and it uses the violin in a way that combines minimalism, improvisation, and her own rock experience. Sarah Neufeld's here to play some of it for us live in the studio, and she'll start us off with the title track, Hero Brother, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you.
That is Sarah Neufeld, live solo here in the Soundcheck studio, and a song called Hero Brother. It is the title track from her forthcoming record, which will be out on August 20th. And Sarah Neufeld joining me here in the Soundcheck studio.
Hi. Oh,
that was fun. A little bit of everything in there. You have sort of the kind of the minimalism, the repeating melodic and rhythmic fragments. You got the stomping kind of folk thing going on. Did the instrument itself lead you into the music on this record?
Yeah, I think I've always wanted to play all the strings at the same time and kind of in that power chord, like punk rock guitar kind of way, with still retaining the sort of the lyricism and prettiness of the instrument.
Right.
So that's kind of a dance between those things.
So after all the years of playing rock, you know, I mentioned Arcade Fire before, but you've played with the Luyas, and we've heard you on this show many years ago with Belle Orquestre, kind of a post-rock or chamber rock band. Mm-hmm. Is this kind of where the violin likes to be, you know?
This is where my violin likes to be, yeah. Yeah, it's fun to explore it on its own like that, to take it to its own kind of limit.
What about, you know, did you think about maybe doing live multi-tracking, you know, looping, delaying, all that kind of stuff?
I mean, that would be another project. This, I really wanted to explore the bareness of it.
Mm. Now, you write on your website about both a meditative practice and a yoga practice. Does this sort of go hand in hand with that?
I mean, everything that we do in life can, like, you know, support everything else or not, or destroy it. Mm-hmm. But I think the yoga practice and the meditation practice has given me some patience and some diligence. It's sharpened those tools.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what I needed to follow this kind of thing through. So there, it's one side of the other.
Did the yoga also give you the stamina? Because I think our listeners will have noticed you were slightly out of breath for a moment at the end of, after that
I know,
performance.
Right?
But then you've recovered pretty quickly, which suggests that, you know, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. With the violin is an interesting imbalance kind of instrument. You're working one arm just insanely hard, and then I think I'm out of breath, though, from, like, thinking about all the notes.
So are these pieces written? Are they fully, like, composed, notated?
They are through composed, but in my own fashion, I never actually notate anything. Maybe I should do that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a nice long.
Then other people could play them. But even if they're not notated, if they're composed pieces,
mm-hmm.
do they change when they're played in some place? I mean, the record sounds like it was done in like a huge cathedral or something.
Right.
Does the sonic space change?
Yeah. The sonic space will change how certain things are played. In Berlin, when I recorded with Nils, we used...
That's Nils Fromm,
yeah,
pianist.
We used this geodesic dome that had the most incredible long but also special reverb and also all sorts of other noises. This wind tunnel sound that was coming through and water dripping. It was this really terrifying place. But the
whose idea was it to go there and make a record?
The Germans. Yeah. It was great. But the thing with that, when you have such an extreme acoustic property, like an 18-second reverb, you tend to play a little differently. And we went in there to record the slower, more sparse passages, and they got so much slower because you want to allow the note, the ringing out of it, and that totally did change those passages. I couldn't have played this. The piece you just heard would not have done well with 18-second reverb. It would have been a storm of confusing notes.
We're speaking with violinist and composer Sarah Neufeld. Her album Hero Brother comes out on August 20th. She'll be playing here live in New York at the Rockwood Music Hall on August 28th. She's playing for us here today. You want to do another piece for us?
Sure thing.
You want to do Dirt?
Do, yes.
All right. Let's hear another live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Sarah Neufeld of Arcade Fire and Bell Orquest and various other bands performing solo here in the Soundcheck studio. That is Sarah Neufeld live on Soundcheck with a piece called Dirt, which will appear on her album Hero Brother out on August 20th. Once again, Sarah will be performing August 28th here in New York at the Rockwood Music Hall and is playing for us in the Soundcheck studio today. Let's hear another piece. This is called Wrong Thought. Once again, Sarah Neufeld live on Soundcheck. Thank you. Sarah Neufeld live on Soundcheck with a piece called Wrong Thought. Once again, that'll be on her new record, Hero Brother, when it comes out on August 20th, but giving us a bit of a preview here in the Soundcheck studio today. Wrong Thought is followed on the record by Right Thought, which has some kind of very bluesy playing. One of, you know, many different styles that, at least in passing, you allude to on this record.
Yeah.
What did you grow up playing as a violinist?
Kind of everything. I mean, I was never told that you had to play a certain kind of music on a certain kind of instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I grew up playing in a blues band or anything like that, but I just listened to so much different music growing up as a kid, and I was so into improvisation. I felt like the world of musical expression was like the oyster, you know, and you could just try everything.
Because a lot of kids, you know, you start violin 4, 5, 6 years old, and you're set down one course, and you know what course that is,
yeah.
You know. Hopefully, you start playing your Bach and your Bartok, and that's great.
But see, I did play the Bartok, and that's what led me. I mean, that's what also helped me know that there were so many infinite ways of composing and playing music. Because Bartok definitely sounded and felt different and Bach.
Sarah Neufeld with us in the Soundcheck studio. Arcade Fire announced the next record is coming out on October 29th. I love the way they announced it. Just replying to a random tweet from a fan. Someone said, I love Arcade Fire. Great. Our record's coming out October 29th. And then, wow! But will that leave you time to do this or Bell Orchestre or any of the other things that we've heard you doing over the years?
The future will tell all. I do expect to play a bunch of these solo shows. They're really fun. I'll work them in, and it'll be a pretty crazy year.
Yeah. Speaking of crazy years, we've been talking about the summer of 93, 20 years ago. Do you remember where you were and
yeah.
what you were listening to?
I mean, I was at that amazing age about, I think it was between grade 8 and grade 9. I was finishing an awkward phase, and I was, getting a little bit more comfortable in my skin. And I remember music at that time was so important for that, just making me feel like a human. And we've talked about a lot of the records I was into, of course, The Breeders, Last Splash, Nirvana, Liz Phair. There were some really powerful ladies doing some really, really, really cool music. And actually The Breeders and the Pixies, of course, at that time got me really excited about guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for that time of life, even though 14 years old, I wouldn't necessarily want to go back.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because for a lot of people, that is the awkward time,
yeah.
is when you're 14. But just looking at some of the the tweets and the comments that have come in, Ray from Queens, great music that summer, was in college, and remember Hey Jealousy by the Gin Blossoms, Radiohead with Creep, which, that was the yeah. summer we first heard Radiohead as well. Antonio tweeted, I was blasting Vibes by Cypress Hill, Insane in the Brain, and What's Up by Four Non-Blondes. Those 90s were great times. Do you look back at what you were listening to then and think, I still like those records. I still listen to those records.
I still listen to Radiohead. I still listen to Pixies and Breeders, Nirvana. Yeah, for sure. Some not so much as others, but
right. All right. Well, Sarah, I've enjoyed hearing Hero Brother and look forward to the actual release of the record on August 20th.
Thank you
so much for giving us a sneak preview of
Thanks
it today.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Neufeld, my guest on Soundcheck, from the Breeders record that she mentioned from that summer of 93. This was their hit, Cannonball. And that's going to do it for today's show. Join us again tomorrow as we continue our week-long Summer of 93 series. You can join in the fun by calling us at 866-939-1612 and telling us where you were during the Summer of 93 and what you were listening to. Tomorrow, NPR music editor Franny Kelly joins us to talk about what was happening in hip-hop that summer, the months right before the release of the Wu-Tang Clan's influential debut, Enter the Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers. And radio host Ann DeLisi of WDET 101.9 in Detroit shares some albums and singles that were released in that summer of 93, including Björk's debut and Nirvana's In Utero, and why they were important to her. And the influential British post-punk band Wire recently released its 13th studio album called Change Becomes Us. They will play live in the studio. Tune in to tomorrow's entire show, live 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org, or listen on the radio at 9 p.m. Eastern. See you back here then. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck. Song.